Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executives After Hours. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. To those of you checking this out for the very first time, I say thank you for your time, your energy, and your willingness to sit down and listen. Today on the episode, I had the pleasure to interview one of my favorite people on this whole entire planet, Mr. Alex Cardona. Now, you don't know Alex because he is located in Barcelona. Alex and his business partner are co-owners of a food tour company called Aborigines. And basically what they do is they're a high-end food tour company that bring in guests, and they personally go around and give you a tour of Barcelona and surrounding areas and tell you the history of the cuisine, where it comes from, and they do a lot more, and we talk about that. Alex might be literally one of the nicest people I've ever met. He is generous and kind and thoughtful and funny as hell, and you get his dry sense of humor throughout the podcast. So have a listen today on the episode. I've got Mr. Alex Cardona, co-founder of Aborigines, which will be in Portland, Oregon in July, by the way, at the Spanish Food Festival. So go come by, check them out, say hello. And as always, I want to say thank you to my content partners, C-Suite Radio, Transformation Radio, Engage Me, and Thrive Global. All right, everyone, remember, leave a review on iTunes. Have a wonderful week. But that's it, man. I'm pretty naked on the podcast. I mean, I'm dressed right now, so I don't mean that literally.
Thank God. But... Thank you.
No worries. And that's why I didn't want the camera on. I really don't want you to see that side of it.
Okay. I'm dressed just in case.
Okay, good. All right. For now. All right. So
yeah.
So Alex, thank you like so much for agreeing to do this, by the way. And I know you're probably like, okay, so what is he going to ask me? I'm not that important. I don't have such a great story, but
exactly. you know me already.
But I don't believe that. I believe that we all have a good story and we all have a unique story. And so, you know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, what it was like, because where did you grow up exactly in Spain? I know it wasn't in Barcelona, but where exactly did you grow up?
I grew up in Alella. Alella is a small town just off Barcelona.
It's north?
Just offside Barcelona. It's 20 kilometers east from the city. It's a small town, small community, and we are not that far from the city, but life is different. So
how so?
Because you get to enjoy the outside. You have a lot of nature. You're close to the beach and to the mountain. So life is not as stressful as in Barcelona. But at the same time, it's good because you are just less than half an hour from the city. So it's a short commute. And in my case, what I enjoy is, I used to enjoy and I do it again now, it's to be part of both lives. So you have your rest time in town and then the rush of the city.
And so do you go home every night back out to your home city?
Yes.
Nice. And so growing up out there, was it like, because I think you have two brothers, you're the middle, is that right?
Yeah.
So like when you were growing up, was there lots of like brother fights? Like what did your dad do? Growing up, actually, what was your dad's job?
My dad used to have his own company. He was running the company for over 25 years. with another partner, and they were forced to shut down.
Why were they forced?
Because of the recession. Well, because of our unpayments. So they had a lot of debts because of clients didn't pay for the jobs. So there was another, it was the only solution. So eventually they had to close, and he had to reinvent himself.
How old were you when that happened?
What was it? That's a tough one. to be honest, I'm very bad with numbers and dates, but I was in high school.
Okay. So what impact did that have, like, for your family at that point?
It had a big impact because the next few years, my mom was the only person at home working for five of us. So she's a doctor, and I remember how she used to work weekdays and then weekends in a hospital, day and night.
Wow.
So it was a tough time because we didn't see her very much. I had a young brother, and I had to take care of him a lot. So, well, I think as a family, that helped us to be more united at the end. Mm-hmm. And we are the family that we are nowadays because of that.
So with your dad losing his job, did he kind of go into a bit of a depression?
Yeah, absolutely. It took almost a year and a half to, step up, to try to do things again. And he had enough courage to reinvent himself. So he signed up for a master's of a new field of expertise that was about to be created in Spain. And he was lucky to get a job easily. And, his career was back on track again. And eventually he became the manager of a company.
So what was he doing? What was his company before it went bankrupt?
It was a technology company. They used to make circuits, electronic circuits for machinery.
Oh, circuits, electronic circuits. Got it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's the language barrier, Alex.
Oh, yes. So. I'm sorry. That's another, you know how public schools in Spain don't teach the best English in the world. And I grew up going to public schools and high schools and college. So,
and you turned out pretty well, so it couldn't have been that bad.
Not thanks to the school, but thanks to traveling a lot and spending my savings around. So, yes.
So what did you think when you saw your dad in this depression? I mean, at first were you like, okay, I get it. But then after a while, did you start to get resentful because your mom was working so much?
Not really, because we knew how much he suffered. I mean, we all suffered that, but especially himself, because it was his own company and we all put a lot of effort there. So it was a natural process you had to digest all that failure. At least it's how it's seen in this country when you have to close something or to change careers. It's been always considered a failure. And so I understood that it would take some time for him to recover and to figure out what to do. But of course, I suffered seeing my mom working that hard, and it was tough for all of us. But I don't blame him.
Mm-hmm. Did you see? So I'm really curious about dynamics and families and how, you know, so for my audience, just so they have a better sense, you know, Alex is the co-founder of a food tour company. I don't actually know what you guys call yourself anymore. So a company called Aborigines, and they specialize in...
We specialize in Catalan cuisine.
Ah.
So Catalonia, it's one of the nations inside the Spanish state. And Barcelona is the capital for that. Today, officially a region.
Mm-hmm.
For some of us, more than that.
Yes, you guys are very passionate, you and your partner. And I had the pleasure of meeting Alex about 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe that was it. When I took some students out to Barcelona, and we did a little bit of a project for them. But more importantly, they fed us with their friend, who was an amazing chef, and you still do work with him, I see. And you know, as you guys will see, listening to Alex and I talk, we'll have some friendly banter. But he struck me as one of the most kindest, forthcoming individuals who just wants to have you as a client of his, essentially, have a great experience. And for anyone in my audience who ever goes to Barcelona and they want to do a food tour, they're foodies, please look up Aborigines because they are amazing, the guys that run that company. So that's my advertisement for you, because I
thank you for that.
I believe in what you guys do. Like, you guys are amazing. so I can see where you get your entrepreneurial attitude, which is from your dad. You know, what did you get from your mom?
Probably the strength to keep going and to be curious about things, to learn how to manage things and difficult situations. She's been through a lot of things, and more recently through some health issues, and she's been always more occupied on us than on herself. Mm-hmm. That's not a positive thing, in my opinion, but you learn to look after your relatives and to care about people as well.
Well, and I say you
among other things.
Well, you have that trait as well, though. Like, you worry about others a lot. That's kind of what you do, you know. So hopefully you take that advice on for yourself.
Yeah. And basically, when you think about it, it's what we try to do, simplifying a lot our job, it's to make people happy. So that's what she was always trying to do, not only with her family, but with patients and with others. So, yeah, for me, it's one of the things I appreciate more from her knowledge.
So in Barcelona, Spain region, what role does family play in your life?
In my opinion, it's everything, because we are not used to move geographically as probably most people in the United States or in other parts of Europe. So for us, family, it's a point of all your life. And due to recent events, especially the financial crisis, young people is learning when you have to go abroad because you have no future in your country, you have to do it. But it's not because you enjoy it. Because if you have a close family, what you want is to stay close to them.
And so one of the things I always thought was interesting about you is you know, before you got into doing food tourism, you had this whole life. And you were, if I recall, you were a journalist.
I was. That,
yes. So what was that like? Like, what drove you to do that job at first?
To be curiosity. I mean, I always wanted to learn everything. So how things work, where things come from. So for me, that's one of my big motivations in life. And I still believe I work as a journalist or as a communicator, because part of my job is to keep doing research and learning about food and gastronomy in general. So that's probably what brought me to journalism.
Yeah, but you could have done history or philosophy for the same thing. So there must have been something unique about journalism that attracted you to it. You know, like, did you like the excitement of new stories? Like, what was the actual field that you ended up being a journalist in?
Well, for me, it was a combination of different aspects. One was the adventurous side of it, that it's a romantic view of journalism because it's not like that anymore. So now you basically work in a desk and you are asked to cut and copy like press releases from companies or political parties or whoever sent them. So that was quite disappointing for not only for myself, for my business partner as well, who is also a journalist. But we also tried to fill the gap of that adventure side of journalism by traveling ourselves. And as freelancers, we're always looking for some adventures abroad.
So what was one of the adventures that you had?
One of the biggest adventures was visiting Pakistan. It was part of, I was visiting a relief compound after an earthquake, but I got to visit a camp that was run by the political party of the Al-Qaeda. I didn't know that at the time, but I found that when I was there, and it was pretty scaring slash exciting.
So let's start first with the scary part. What about it was scary?
Well, because you feel, it was two of us, we were escorted by Pakistan police, but I thought that they didn't have the authority to protect us in an eventual whatever that could happen.
Yeah.
So it was like feeling lost there, you know, that something could happen to you. But at the same time, that's part of the excitement of traveling for me.
So I would think in that situation, part of the excitement would have been, you know, that you're being a part of something that very few people get to witness.
Exactly.
Because I would imagine at the very top, like to make it to the top, quote unquote, in that industry, that's like, what, 3% of the individuals that work in that space? So how long did you do journalism?
You mean to study or working as a journalist?
Working as a journalist.
Working almost 10 years.
Wow. So either you were passionate about it for 10 years or you were slow to realize there was no money in it in 10 years. So which one was it?
Well, I did some money, but I had to do many things at the same time. So when I was still in college, I was working as a photographer for basically social events like weddings. And that's something I kept doing when I left college, and that was easy money. Not a very pleasant job, but
why not?
I got to see the dark side of the business, and something I didn't really enjoy.
What was dark about it? You're taking photos of people who are in love.
Yes, that's how it seems, but it's not like that. So you see how the whole industry works, and it's all based in commissions, and they don't have freedom to decide which company you're using for your catering or who's your photographer going to be. Even the priest in our churches, they have like exclusivity. So they get a piece of the cake from the photographer, from the people who deliver the flowers, from anyone. So
that sounds corrupt.
Yeah, I would say socially accepted. You know, morality in Spain is a little bit, flexible.
Yeah. Because, you know, to me, when you say that, because almost like, so if I'm getting married, so I understand. So say I'm going to get married and I go to the local parish and I say, I want to get married. Essentially, that priest then gets a cut of all the other vendors because he approves the vendors. He's like, you're going to use this vendor, this vendor, this vendor.
You basically sign a contract with God, well, with the priest, but and saying that you are the only one allowed to work in that temple, but in exchange for money, of course.
Yes.
So you agree either a fee for each celebration or an annual fee. That's how it works.
It seems odd to me that in a city so close to where the Jesuits set up, that there would be some gray ethical decision making, if you will. But I also think that as you pointed out, it's part of the culture at this point. So it's probably been generations that this has been going on. And so if you don't know that it's right or wrong, you just don't know that it's right or wrong. Does that make sense?
Yes, in a way, because I got to work with all photographers, like old school, and for them that was normality. So that's the situation they lived all their careers. for new generations of photographers, they start questioning if that was moral or not. So things are changing, and I've been out of the industry for a long time, but probably is also changing.
So you know, as you're a journalist, what was your like final deciding point to where you were like, I can't do this anymore? Was it your love for food, or was it the difficulty of earning a living?
No. For me, not, because when I had a job at the last stage of my career as a journalist, it was a good job, well paid. I was working for the public broadcast company, and for me it was a lack of motivation. So when you feel frustrated of not being able to do new things by yourself, to create your own projects, and that's a feeling that we used to share with my current business partner, Cesc. So for us, it was a way of changing that by building your own thing.
Do you think is that where you realized that you were a bit of an entrepreneur?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's part of my, as I said, my education, to not to be satisfied with an easy job and to take always the easy path, but to take the risk and to try to make your own living. So I never got a pay for my parents, for instance, and I always tried to find a small jobs to have pocket money.
So when you decide to leave journalism because you have this burning fire inside you to be an entrepreneur, you know, what was the final deciding point? And talk to me a little bit, like, all right, I'm quitting. Then what? Like, what was the then what for you?
Then what? Well, we were talking about this for a while, so it was not an instant decision, and we just needed to set a date. So otherwise you keep talking and talking and complaining and things never happen.
Yeah.
So for me, it's important to set up a date and to start then.
And so you and Fresk had this conversation, like, you know, on July 1st, 2015, we are starting Aborigines.
For me, it was at the end of a contract, because I used to have short contracts, one after the other one. And one day I decided to take a break and to go scuba diving in Canary Islands. So I spent a few months there, and that's when I did this internal process of, rediscovery, or maybe it sounds too
mystical,
but to think what you want to do in your life. And it was
like
a personal...
You took like
exactly.
a pause, yeah, to reflect. Mm-hmm. There's nothing magical or mystical. It's smart. So, like, you know.
And I remember a phone conversation with my partner on the taxi back to the airport, on my way to the airport. And that's when we decided, are we going to discuss seriously about this? And he said, yes. So meet me there. And he came over.
To the Canary Islands?
And that's when... And that's when we start building this idea more seriously.
Is that when you tried to go scuba diving with him and then disconnect his oxygen when you were 30 meters below?
I will do it this summer.
I might want to give him a heads up to that. Okay. So as you make this launch, what was like one of the major fears that you had as you're starting to do this?
A fear probably about the unknown. So when you don't know where to start and what's the first stone you have to put to build that. So it's been an ongoing process of learning and failing and a lot of wins and fails, which keep your life interesting.
Hmm. And so, you know, as you and Fresk start to go down this path, did you know, I mean, because you guys were talking about a food tour company, what made you choose Food Tour?
Well, actually, this is something we used to do for friends and relatives living abroad. So every time they would come here or they would send friends, we would do this for free. So for us, it was also a way to change from an NGO into a company to make a living out of that.
An NGO. Awesome.
Exactly. So I think that's when we grew up. So when we realized, so maybe we can make money out of this. So
what I think is really kind of amazing, and I don't know if this is Spanish culture, if this is specific to Alex, but you just seem so well grounded about it and so kind of matter of fact, like this was what was next. And, you know, there was a little bit of fear, but so what? We'll figure it out. You know, is that a reflection of Alex or is it more of like the Spanish laid back culture?
This is Alex, absolutely. So I remember talking to this about the project to some friends from the same town, friends we shared years, school, social life, and they only care about getting a job at the bank or at the public administration and to have to work 8 to 3 and to have free evenings. So that was their only challenge in life. And when I told them I'm quitting my job and I'm starting this, they treat me like a fool, basically.
What did they say to you?
Are you nuts? Are you crazy? Because, well, it was a time, I mean, it's still tough, but when it wasn't easy to find a job or to get contracts. So for them, it was like a suicide, basically.
Yeah. They look at you and they think, well, you've got a stable job, you've got money coming in. Why would you change that? Why would you take that risk? That's
exactly
kind of the way I thought of it. And so what it sounds like is that, you know, because of the financial situation, because unemployment is quite high in Spain, especially with the under 30s, under 35s, it would seem to me that people, individuals, your friends, are very risk adverse. Like they just want to avoid it at all cost.
I wouldn't say it's only because of the recession, because it's been I think it's a consequence of dictatorship and a social behavior, because I mean we've been through difficult times, and not long time ago people was living under a dictatorship, and there were of course the wealthy people who could start their companies, but most workers, they didn't have access to a lot of money, a lot of savings. So for them, possession and that involves housing or jobs was so important. So we are still the second, third generation after the war. And this is a knowledge that we hear, I mean, we receive from our grandparents and parents. So my family could be an exception because they have never been that conservative. But others, for them, that's the goal in their lives, you know, to keep this.
And hold on to what they get. And just
Exactly. So they don't take many risks and to keep everything controlled.
So do you remember the day you gave your first food tour that someone paid for?
Yes.
And tell me about that. Like, what was going through? Like, were you giddy with excitement? Were you so happy that someone was paying you to do this job?
Yeah, I mean, we did some tests with friends and girlfriends, but of course, that's never the same perception, and they were locals. So our first international customer, they came through us randomly, because not recommended. They just found us online. And we, of course, we were pretty excited. And now we still run the tours ourselves. At the time, it was the two of us. So can you imagine two guides for a couple, for two people? That's the highest ratio of guides per guest. Cost-wise, didn't make any sense, but for us, it was a training.
Yeah.
And they are still sending us people. So
that's awesome.
We became friends, and yes.
And so I'm just trying to imagine the emotional feeling. So as you're going through this, you know, and you and Fresk are taking these people along, Because knowing you a little bit and knowing how you want to make sure people are happy, I could hear you say, "Do you like this? Are you okay? Do you like this? Do you want to do this? Do you like this?" Like I can hear you saying
Yeah,
that. You
you learn how to keep the distance, but of course, because that's how it is, how we are, that's our way of being. We always are over, you know, the people and trying to make them happy and
know?
over satisfying them. So yes,
And
we keep doing that.
when was your first tour? Like what year was that?
2012.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah, we start talking about the company in 2011 and operating legally 2012.
Is there a lot of like, do you have competitors that are super unethical?
Well, ethical or not, legal or not, I would say legal or not, because ethical, I personally don't know. I know the whole industry, it's pretty corrupted, so they take decisions based only in commissions. So it's, we are going back to the priest thing, that the whole recommendation basis, it's all about getting money.
So what I want to do, this is a perfect break point, is I want to do a segment called Fast Five, and then I want to come back around to Aborigines and talk about kind of how you do the tours, what's your thought around the tours, where's the company going, and things like that. So are you ready to play Fast Five?
Sure.
Okay, it's five random questions. Answer them as fast or slow, or in Spanish if you want to add some excitement, if you like. All right. What question one, what was your first job?
My first job was my first year of high school, and it was a grape harvest in my town. And I would say my back still hurts because of that. I
So
spent the whole summer picking grapes.
I always my follow-up question. What did you what did you learn from that job?
Well, that money is not easy to get, and sometimes involves physical pain, but also that you have a lot to learn from old people, because I remember it was a group of friends. We were all teenagers, and together with us, they were working a lot of old people from town, and they were very fast and very professional. So I was admired by them at the time.
So basically, people three times your age kicked your ass on the grape field.
That's it. Yes.
Question two, who do you admire most?
In a professional or personal level?
Any level. I don't really care how you define it for yourself.
Maybe I would go back to something we discussed before, but I would say my dad. Because he was through a difficult situation, and he had the strength to reinvent himself at the age of 50 with three kids, and to get the passion again for work and to end his career successfully.
What did he end up getting his master's in?
It's security and hygiene in work. So basically, every company is required to have a master plan in these topics, and there are companies specialized in doing that. I
Awesome.
don't know if that makes sense to you, but I could explain it much better in Spanish.
So, I mean, basically, what you're saying is what his job is to work with companies to create security and safety plans.
Exactly.
Got it. All right. Question. Yeah, by the way, I also think that's interesting. I was thinking about, you said your dad there. Do you talk to your dad about running a business and try to learn from his mistakes?
Honestly, not. So, since he retired, he seems to be more interested in what I do. But when I first started, I felt like it sounded like a joke to him. It's not that he said or he expressed his opinion saying "Don't do that," but I could feel how he, you know, listened to my explanations and stories. And I know what his face means, and maybe he wasn't very confident, but now I know he's very proud of it.
You weren't projecting, like you weren't you weren't just creating that feeling from your dad, or did you like really sense that he was kind of like, all right, this is a fad that Alex is doing, so he'll do this for a few years and do something different?
Maybe.
Yeah. Because I always think that we often do that with our parents. Like, I think about having, you know, I think since I last talked to you, I think I have another kid since we last talked. You know, having four kids, I often think about, first of all, I think about how I'm screwing my kids up, which is probably pretty significant. But I always think about how they're interpreting what's happening and how they're creating their own truth and honesty in that moment based on their view and their experiences. And so I always, you know, and I even think about that growing up in my house, how I've probably created horrific scenes in my mind that really weren't a big deal, but I thought they were at that time. And so that's why I'm always curious. You know, you obviously were older at that point, and maybe you were nervous about trying to get your dad's acceptance to what you're doing. And maybe you were hoping he would jump on board or whatnot. I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably right. Agree. No, I just agree with you.
All right. So now that I've analyzed you a little bit, I feel better about myself. So question three, I actually look forward to this answer from you. What animal best represents your management style?
Animal, probably an octopus.
I know you like to eat that. So please explain.
Yeah, that's, I'm kind of obsessed with octopus, you know that.
Why is that?
But I mean, when it comes to food, it's probably my preferred dish. But also as an animal, I have I admire that animal. So
tell me why.
For many reasons. First, for his ability to adapt. His adaptability to any kind of situation and environment. So that's something I also try to do, to know where you are and who are you dealing with, and to adopt different attitudes. And it's also an animal that knows when to say, stop, I'm here, and to show some strength. Doesn't mean to be violent. It means to make the point and to, you know, let others know that you are there.
Mm. Awesome.
But also the tentacles, you know, it's also a way to control things and to be aware of all things that matter in your company. Also try to do that.
Can that be a weakness, though?
Probably. I didn't say it was perfect. I said.
I was just asking about the controlling statement. That's why I was kind of.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, it's a problem we have, and we talked about this before. That as a small company, you try to control everything, and we have to learn how to. Let others do things for us.
Mm-hmm. So I'll come back to that and we start talking about Aborigines in a second. So question four, what behavior, this is probably going to reflect Fresk. What behaviors irritate you in colleagues? So like what behaviors do your coworkers have that make you annoyed?
I wouldn't point on the ones he doesn't have, but the ones another partner we used to have had, that was the lack of motivation and the lack of proactivity and not to be 200 or 300% focused in finding business opportunities all the time. So when you see someone acting as an employee but being a business partner, doesn't make sense.
Which is why you guys asked them to leave, though.
Yes.
So that makes sense. All right, final question of this Not Fast Five. What kind of situations bring out the best in Alex?
Probably stress and pressure. I was always good working under pressure, and that's when my creativity comes out. So never was a good planner and planned situations beforehand. So I always try to react quick and fast. And I proved to be really good in those situations.
And I could see that. And I could see that also doing the type of journalism that you were doing, you know, going out to Afghanistan and other places like that, where you kind of have to high stress and you have to be kind of ready for anything, you know. But what I also think is interesting about you, though, is that you love scuba diving. And scuba diving is this place that's kind of isolating because you can't really hear anything. You're kind of by yourself. I mean, you obviously scuba dive with other people. But I imagine that scuba diving gives you a sense of calmness and it allows you to recharge, Alex.
Absolutely. That's my meditation time during the week. I try to do it once a week at least during the year. And that's when you, I mean, your mind is in, well, isolated. You don't think in any other matters and just focus in that activity. So for me, that's the perfect evading moment.
So I think that if I have really sensitive ears to pressure, but I've done snorkeling, and I think that if I could figure out how to do scuba diving, I would love it. I remember as a kid that I used to love just being underwater and just like the... I grew up in a bit of a chaotic house, and so I found that being underwater kind of gave me a sense of just stillness, I think is the only way I can explain it. And I feel like, you know, because your job, you're so on. And what I mean by that is, like, when you're with people, you are very present and very engaged and very conversational and funny and witty. And that is exhausting after a night of that. And so I can see how scuba diving allows you to kind of have this other side of Alex, which is probably more quiet, more reserved, and it allows you to kind of focus inward and, as you said earlier, recharge yourself at least once a week, which I think is awesome.
Yes.
So, all right.
You're invited to join me anytime.
Just don't turn my oxygen off. Yeah. All right. Well, that was Fast Five. So thank you for playing Fast Five. And what I want to do is just spend like 5-10 minutes and talk about your business, right? So if I'm a guest, if I'm someone who's looking to do a food tour, what would I expect if I come to you and your organization and say, I want a food tour? And I know you have different categories and levels and experiences, but then the average experience, what would I expect?
So what we always try to offer is something very personal. And that means that any guide you would have, which means myself or Cesc, my business partner, will run a different kind of tour, an itinerary, because for us, food and wine and gastronomy, it's at the end not only what you're eating, but it's to be able to talk about your own life, your education, politics, religion, social matters. So it's a reflector your way of living through food and wine. So that's for us the key point of the experience. And also, we have been on the other side because we have been traveling quite a lot. And we know what people, they want to feel special. So not in a canned experience that your friend will recommend you, I will do it next year, and it will be the exact same itinerary. We try to change it every day. And that means that we are in touch of our customers, guests, we call them guests, and we ask them about their personal preferences, if they have been here before or not. So at the end, we try to build a customized experience that will be unique for them. Hmm. It sounds, I mean, it's that simple, but it's also an exception in the industry. And how is that? Because it's cost-wise, it's less effective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I would imagine just from, because there's two, but you guys also charge a premium price for it too. Because you are, I think you do at least, maybe you don't, but you're such a niche provider in that space.
Exactly.
And you don't always go to the same restaurants every time. But I swear to God, you must know every single independent restaurant owner in Barcelona and around, because going around with you, everybody knew who you were, you know, in the industry. How do you guys run your company and not fall into a trap of going to the same 5 to 7 places every time?
Well, because we make the effort to change, and that would be like the comfortable way and the easy way to have an agreement with all these places and to pay them once a month, of course, 1 month later. That's how it works in Spain, or at least 1 month. And it would be every day the same. But for us, maybe it's being also selfish that we want to have a different experience ourselves every day. Otherwise, it would be boring. And we would be going back like 6, 7, 8 years to our previous job, which means boring life, and that's not what we want. Mm-hmm. On the other side, our guests, we want them to have a fresh and improvised experience, and well, it seems that it's working, and they appreciate that. So they appreciate that you make this extra effort to create an itinerary just for them.
And so how have you seen the business grow since you started?
We saw that our guests kept recommending us, and that was the best marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. The cheapest and the most effective, making people happy. So any happy customer would become a prescriptor, and we had people who really sent us a lot of business. So it's a long process and slow, but it's how we did it, because we were also, we wanted to be able to change things on the way and to be adaptable. So it made sense to make it more an organic growth. Mm-hmm. Now we reach that point where we have to take some decisions, and one of them would be to, well, we are now figuring out how to scale that business, and we want to hire someone, but it has to be someone with a very specific profile, and it's not easy to find. Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, because I know when we last spoke, you guys do a lot of different stuff. You do some TV stuff. I think you do a little bit of writing still. So kind of describe to me the full breadth, the full scope of everything you guys do, because I know it's not just the food tours.
Yes, so we do these food tours, but not only tours, but also trips. So like food itineraries from half a day to 20 days around Spain, all food and wine focused. And we do this either for aficionados, so for people who really appreciate good quality food and who has an interest for culture, and they want to go beyond the cliches of a city and a society. But also we do it for professionals. So that was a target that we didn't identify in the beginning, but it was, well, it appeared and eventually has become a big part of our business.
Because what do you mean by that, with professionals? Like professional chefs that will come out and you'll show them where to go?
So food and wine professionals, from chefs to business owners, restaurant owners, hotel owners, producers, importers. So people who has a business that involves importing foods from Spain. And then from time to time, they come here and they want to know who is the producer behind, or they want to find more products. So we have to keep them updated. And for instance, with chefs, what we do is to help them create new dishes and to keep their menu updated. Hmm. So we design for them special tours and activities as well.
I know I just saw that you had someone from Portland, Oregon out there, which is where I'm from.
Yes.
Yes. Did they own a food truck, or was it a restaurant, or like what did they do?
So in Portland we have these friends or guests that have been here before, and the chef is John Gorham, He has Toro Bravo, among other restaurants. And this July 2017, they are creating the new, well, a new food festival, Spanish food festival. And they had invited us, and we'll go to promote our company, but also to promote some food and drinks from our region. So we will represent some producers, and we will do some tastings and some events for 4 days.
In Portland?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wish I was living there. That would be my stomping ground, and then I could show you all the four places that I know of food. You'd be disappointed in all of them, and it could be a really good experience.
I'm sure. So please don't text me them.
And so now, where do you talked about, just a couple more questions. Where you talk about this, you're at this decision point of growth, and it sounds like the organization's maxed out in terms of time and energy, and you can't really do anymore. So is there a particular area of the business that you're trying to grow more than another area?
Yes, we have someone now helping us in corporate travel, because Barcelona has become a big destination for congresses and events. So that's an industry by itself. They have different rules, different scale from our main activity, but definitely a field we want to explore, and we are doing it now.
But you're also doing like export of products too, right? So do you have, under your company, I feel like you have different verticals or different categories that you work in. So you guys are also exporting Cantillon goods.
Because we used to help buyers and sellers to get in touch, and we realized that we were missing something there. So we decided to take a step in front and to be part of that. So now we are offering, promoting some products abroad ourselves. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's also an activity per se that involves a lot of work, and we need someone, or we have to figure out how to look after all diverse activities at the same time and to grow.
Because I feel like that's another job where you could just hire someone to do it, because it's less about the tours and it's more about the transaction versus.
Yeah, go
ahead.
For us, it also makes sense to know who is behind the product. And the reason to choose a product is not only that the product is high quality, but also the story behind. And that involves a personal relationship with the producer and something our other job involves, which mm-hmm. is field research.
So where can my audience find you online?
Well, basically, they can reach us through our website. It's aborigensbarcelona.com, aborigensbarcelona.com. Mm-hmm. Aborigens is the name of our company, and that means in Catalan, well, natives or aboriginals.
And my last question that I have for you, Alex, is a question I ask everybody. For who you are personally and professionally, how do you define happiness?
Happiness for me, it's the combination of being motivated for your work and have enough free time to enjoy your social life with friends and family. That's a perfect match.
Awesome. Alex, thank you so much for stopping by Executives After Hours. You're my first fully fledged Spanish expat non-American on the podcast. So I appreciate you speaking in English the whole time and not swearing at me in Spanish. So thank you.
Yeah, my apologies for my English again.
No,
thank
it's
you.
Great. It's great. No, it's good. Okay. Right, have a great week.
You too. Thank you.